The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 4th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a gorgeous day in the Auburn area. Notice I didn't say the other town that we run up against today. I'm not saying their name today unless I have to, and I don't really want to for this singular day. We're happy to be here. Happy to have you along with us on this September 4th, 2025. Christian, happy Thursday, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy Thursday. Happy game day to you, sir, as well. I know you can feel it. You can feel the energy.
This is how
buzzing
I feel right now.
I'm just fired up to be here today. It's pretty cool.
That's me today, baby.
I forgot that
that's
you
me.
Still had that hotkey.
I'm never getting rid of that hotkey. That will stay on our computer I'm fired or dead.
That was not played on Monday, and we apologize for that.
It wasn't played on Monday.
Yeah.
I played it today.
We apologize. We're going to have a board full of hotkeys here before everything.
We do need some more over
is
there.
Said and
but that's
done.
A good one.
It is. That is a fantastic one and a perfect way to get the show started for you today. Yeah, I can say it's Auburn Opelika game day, baby. And everybody is very, very excited. Man, you can feel it driving around town. You feel that nervous energy like you do when you wake up on Saturday morning and make your way to Jordan-Hare Stadium. It's going to be a fantastic game. It's going to be a great show for you that we have on tap as well. Man, Thursdays is a very jam-packed show for you. We're starting it off with a little bit of a new segment here on Thursdays, and what better way to start it off than today as we get to talk a little bit of NFL. We get to talk the NFL picks, the games throughout the week, not spending too much time on it, but Thursdays are a nice way to start the week since it's the start of the NFL season. So we'll spend the first 15 minutes or so diving into some of those games, some of the biggest storylines, and make our kind of unofficial predictions for those games. As there's one game tonight, one game tomorrow, and then the full slate on Sunday. We're talking Auburn football news before we get to Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, who's back inside, or back in Auburn, rather, not back inside Auburn, but back in Auburn. He's going to be in Jordan-Hare Stadium. We're going to get his thoughts, recapping everything that happened in Waco, Texas. His thoughts on the offense, the defense, some things that he would love to see get cleaned up over these next couple of weeks. As, man, Auburn and Oklahoma continue to be the game that everybody is slowly beginning to turn their focus towards, and now it's all about building that confidence before you make the trip to Norman. Then we're talking high school football to finish up hour number one before we get to head coach of Auburn High School Football, Keith Etheridge, to start hour number two.
Yep, there's a lot to get to today, and phone lines will be open for now, but it's going to kind of be sporadic throughout the show today. And so if you want to be on the air, if you want to be on with us, you want to be on the line, you can give us a call right now, 334-321-1390, 334-321-1390. Or you can always shoot us a text during the show in our on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. You mentioned it. It is Auburn and Opelika for the 100th time. It is a day early, of course, today being Thursday. They moved it up. It's the statewide game of the week, and so we're excited to have that for you over on the Auburn High Sports Network on Wings 94.3. We'll tell you a little bit more about that as we go throughout today's show. But yeah, college football season is underway. High school football season well underway. And starting tonight, Christian, the NFL season is underway, which means football is back in all three phases. And we're going to start doing this every week, having a segment talking about the NFL because it is a lot of fun. And we're going to be airing a ton of games here on ESPN 106.7. Starting with Sunday Night Football this week. We'll have Monday Night Football for you as well. Some of those Sunday afternoon games on ESPN Radio. So it's an exciting time. And no, I'm not forcing us to talk about this because my Packers are one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl and have the greatest defensive player in the game. And Jordan Love's about to have his MVP season.
Wow.
But we could talk about that if we want to.
Wow.
I really am looking forward to the NFL because there's so many moving parts and so many new names and new places, and you just feel like a new wave of players have come through the NFL and have really started to make their mark. And you have some guys who have been around it for quite some time that might just be on their way out as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a very different season. You're seeing the veteran leaders who we watched take over the league 5 or 6 years ago, and now you're seeing them, again, kind of become those captains. You're seeing them take the newer guys under the wings. You mentioned the defensive players kind of working their way throughout the league. It's going to be very, very fun. I believe we're going to have our two-man fantasy football draft. I'm just kidding. That would be...
So I say I'm not prepared for that.
And with two-man, I mean, that would be...
I have seen people starting to do I was talking with some buddies the other day. They do a fantasy league where they draft players who they think are bad and won't play. They have to be starters.
Oh, that's what I was saying.
That was you, wasn't
yeah.
it? Okay, you we draft
did,
people.
We did it in high school. You had to draft yeah. starters or guys that would at least see the field, but you tried to score the lowest amount of points
I forgot that
possible.
Was you that was telling me that. Yeah, because you just draft players that are going to play because you
yes.
can't. Yeah, I mean, you can't draft somebody that is – on the IR, not going to play all year, but I think that's fascinating.
It was
I think
a lot
that's
of fun.
Really cool.
8-man leagues. It yeah. was so much fun, and it was you were sitting there on Sunday afternoon because everybody has 3 or 4 drafts, and you want to make sure that you don't have that player in your good draft and your bad draft because mm-hmm. half the time it would be like, yes, he scored. No, dang it. I didn't need him to score.
Well, that's the thing, too, is I'm getting to that age now. I'm really old, by the way, where I don't want 8 fantasy drafts. It's the same thing we talked about during March Madness. I don't like to have 8 brackets because you cheer for, you know, Saquon Barkley in this one, but you're going up against Saquon Barkley in this league, and your quarterback's Matt Stafford here, but dang it, Matt Stafford threw against my team in this other league. Like, that just gets annoying. It gets stressful for no reason, and so I'm down to, like, 2 leagues this year, I think. I'm only in 2 fantasy football leagues. That is by choice, but I'm only in 2 this year, and I'm okay with that.
I think I'm in 3, but...
I used to do a bunch.
And it's weird because... I was in the same general spot every time in the draft this year, which has not happened with, like, lineups, whether that's my keeper, whether that's our league, or whether that's one with my other buddies. It was, I think ours, I was 10th of 12th, but the other ones, I was 2nd. So when it got around to the snake, I was relatively in the same spot. So thankfully, my roster looks relatively the same throughout, which could be very good or very bad, but at least it makes it to your point of where I'm relatively cheering on the same names.
Yeah, well, if you have fantasy football stuff that you want to talk about, shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. But what are your just overall thoughts on the upcoming NFL season? I mean, you've still got some big-name quarterbacks flying around out there. Lamar Jackson still, of course, with the Ravens. They appear to be one of the betting favorites to win the Super Bowl. Jalen Hurts and the Eagles trying to defend, go back-to-back. Patrick Mahomes is still in Kansas City, but that may be a program or maybe an organization that's on the downswing of things, right? Maybe not as good as they used to be. You've got some big names at running back floating around there, too. What's your overall thoughts on this upcoming NFL season?
Give me the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. Travis Kelce just got married, and so he married Taylor Swift, for those that are unaware.
No. They're engaged.
Sorry. Yeah, that's
They're
true.
Engaged.
They're going to get married after she performs at the halftime show after letting the Chiefs make it to the Super Bowl.
Jokes on you, that is the halftime show, is their wedding.
They're going to propose right after, and that will be their official tying the knot. So
how much
for those that did not know the script already, sorry. that we already read it off to you.
How much do you think their wedding's going to cost?
I don't even want to think about a number.
But do
like
you
that.
Think they're going to have like a like super over the top, just outrageous, elegant wedding, or maybe they're the type to kind of have it on a low key level, like 300-400 people?
If they were smart, they'd just do it live stream on their show on the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, if she just put out a post that said, hey, we need to pay for this wedding, her crazy fans would pay for it. Yeah. I need every Swiftie to pay me $5. They'd pay for it.
But
they
Travis Kelce, after having two down years, now he's engaged to Taylor Swift, and she claims that she knows a lot about football now, which, to be fair, I did watch some of the New Heights podcast, and you did get to see her as a human.
And she admitted that she didn't know, and then she learned, so I give her credit.
But saying, yeah, you saw her in human form.
She said she thought the quarterbacks and the offenses played on the same time, which kind of makes sense. It's kind of
Travis Kelce's going to lead the league in fantasy points.
Are the Chiefs really your pick to win the Super Bowl?
No.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's not a bad pick.
I mean, it probably could and should be, but
just overall thoughts, though.
I'm interested to see what the running back position does this year. It's a position group that's kind of gone by the wayside, and it's been the receiving backs that have needed to dominate, not only on the fantasy side of things, but to have overall success. And you're seeing so many of these guys that can do so much, and they're so young, right? I mean, guys like Bucky Irving, guys like...
That's my fantasy back.
Bucky Irving is?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Guys like Bijan Robinson are in that category as well. So many of these younger guys are getting drafted. Christian McCaffrey kind of started that wave of, man, catching 6 or 7 balls every single game, but also running for 80 yards where, you know, you get a touchdown and you have 130, 140 yards of total offense. I'm excited to see what that looks like versus what Saquon Barkley and that style of offense looks like, to where his targets every single game is 1.5 or 2 just because their offensive line is so good and you still run the football. And obviously you saw that running the football does still win you football games, and it can win you the football games at the highest level.
Well, unfortunately, and it pains me to say it, but look at the two-headed monster that Detroit has.
Yes.
I mean, they've got Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. Those are two of the best backs in the league, and it's 1A, 1B there in Detroit.
It is, yeah, and very interested to see what that offense looks like without Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson now the Chicago Bears head coach, and hopefully I can say this braggingly. I drafted DeAndre Swift too early in all three of my drafts, hoping that he can kind of be that Jahmyr Gibbs. I don't think he's as explosive, but Ben Johnson will find ways to get him the football. And so I would love for that pick to really, really work out.
Is there a team for you that's not necessarily getting a ton of love but could make some noise in the NFL this season? Again, maybe a team that's not top 6 or 7 in Super Bowl odds, but one that could make the playoffs and make a little bit of a run. Is the answer too easy to say Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos? Like, is that too
easy? I'm trying to see
let me see the
odds.
Their chances to make the playoffs, I have it, according to this article, at 53.5% for the Denver Broncos. I don't have their Super Bowl odds pulled up, but
they're at plus 2,200 right now to win it.
I don't know if I want them to win it, but I think they could make some noise, especially in the division that they're in, too.
They're 11th in the overall betting odds to win the Super Bowl. The team that I thought of, at least first, I think the Broncos is a very good pick. I'm going to go back to the Bengals. I know that their offensive line is still struggling, but I think Joe Burrow wins the MVP if they have any sort of winning record and any sort of playoff buzz last year. Jamar Chase is going to be the best receiver in the country again. Chase Brown is another one of those running backs that kind of emerges and can give you 60 yards on the ground, but also 60 yards through the air. Might be the best true pocket pass quarterback in the entire league. I think the Cincinnati Bengals, who sit at plus 2,000, could make a little bit of noise as well.
Problem is, man, they're going to have to score 35 points a game to beat anybody because their defense is so bad, and they lost everybody that they had. They did sign to an extension on that defensive front and paid him a
Hendrickson
boatload of money.
Yeah.
But he's the only one they've got, man. They give up so many yards, so many points, and in the NFL, man, if you give them something, they're going to take it from you. That's my concern with the Bengals, but Joe Burrow's very good enough to put up 35, 40 points a game, and yeah, can keep the Bengals in it no matter what.
Two other teams that are plus 2,000 right in this same category, Washington Commanders, are you high on Jalen Daniels, or is that sophomore slump inevitable? Right behind him, the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, I was looking at the Rams earlier today, or the Chargers earlier today, and I just
Chargers are
know,
plus 3,000, if that's what you're...
Oh.
Chargers are plus 3,000. I was talking about the Los Angeles Rams.
I don't know, man. I just...
It's a lot of trust.
That's a lot of trust in Sam Darnold. That's a lot of trust in them. And or not Sam Darnold.
Matthew Stafford.
Matthew Stafford. Apologies. Yeah, Matthew Stafford. I think they're good, not great. Could they squeak into the postseason? Yes, but I'm not running with them full head of steam. I'm betting on Jaden Daniels before I bet on Matthew Stafford this year.
What about
that's
one,
just me.
One team that's in that top echelon or that top tier that's not going to pan out.
Oh, not going to pan out. Oh, that's not the direction I was going.
I know not to ask certain questions.
Am I crazy to say the Buffalo Bills? Am I crazy to say that the Buffalo Bills might take a step back? They've been so close for so long, and Josh Allen is so good. And I know the Bills had to rebuild a little bit on their defense, especially on the defensive front. They did that through the draft and things. But I just, man, if it hasn't happened already, it may never happen for Buffalo. And that's kind of where I'm at. So, yeah, that's my pick. My pick is Buffalo to underperform this year. They'll make the postseason. I'll take the Bills to make it to the playoffs and lose in the first round.
Okay. So not do what they usually do and lose to the Chiefs.
No. They're not going to get to the AFC Championship game and lose again.
Okay.
Not this time. I think they take a step back, and I think they finally realize it just ain't going to happen up there.
What about the team that's plus 1,200? That might be my pick. There's a Georgia-looking logo on there that I'm just really
not... I would put money on them to win the Super Bowl too, baby. Green Bay. Yes, the Packers.
If I had to have one that's not going to pan out, is it? I mean, I guess this is not as crazy because they're not as high up on that board, but I mean, the 49ers are right in there at plus 1,800. I would take a couple teams below them before them, just because I know that Purdy's there. I know that Christian McCaffrey, they also got... who'd they get from Washington?
Offense or defense?
The running back. Brian Robinson. That's who they got. Could be a very, very good...
God, he's either so good or just nothing.
Or just gets thrown down the depth chart.
Yep.
But what a draft pick that could be in your fantasy league, because CMC will get hurt in week 3. And
that's what I did.
Brian Robinson will be the guy from there on out.
Yeah.
But before we hit the break, a game tonight.
Yeah.
Dallas and Philadelphia, the Cowboys and the Eagles, a 7:20 kickoff over on NBC in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. They'll get their rings before the game. Philly, an 8.5-point favorite in this game, the over-under 48.5. Who do you like and why?
I have the Eagles, and I have them to cover. I have Philadelphia 10-plus in this game. I think Dak is not good. I think the Eagles are really good on defense, and Jalen Hurts is just such a smart quarterback. This game being in Philly definitely helps as well. Clearly, we're not talking weather issues yet, but just being on the road, ring night and things. We've seen some teams underperform on banner night. It ain't going to happen with the Eagles tonight. They've got too many dudes. Saquon's it. Okay, he may not be the dude this year across the league, but the Eagles are still loaded. They have to replace a couple of dudes in the secondary, though, so keep an eye on that. But Dallas, just they're imploding from the inside. So give me the Eagles. Give me them to cover the 8.5-point spread. I have Philadelphia winning by 10-plus.
Cowboys give up 137 rushing yards per game. That was last year. And they lost a couple big guys that I think helped them when they needed
they
to get
did.
The rush stops. I'd be surprised if they'd use too much of Saquon Barkley tonight, just because I don't think it'll be overly needed. I could see this being a little bit of a lower scoring game, just simply from the standpoint of the way Philadelphia wants to run the football and almost squeeze Dak from the inside out, make it to where every single drive you feel so mandatory to come up with points.
Yeah,
I think Dak will play better this year. I think the Cowboys actually have a pretty good year with CD and then with George Pickens on the other side. But I'll take the team at home on a very, very good night. I will take them 8.5 seems a little scary, but yeah, I'll take them by 10 as well.
Yeah, I don't hate the under bet on that, though. Under 48.5, I don't hate that.
Almost like a 28-17 type of game.
Yeah, that game's tonight.
There we go. There's my prediction.
There you go. That game's tonight. Chiefs-Chargers tomorrow, and then a bunch of games coming up on Sunday, and then Vikings-Bears on Monday Night Football. Can't wait to watch those two teams, and hopefully a meteor will come and hit the stadium. Okay, we'll take our first break here in hour number one. Come back and talk about some unfortunate injury news for Auburn football. Your leading rusher from game one, he won't be out there Saturday. We talk about that coming up next here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we get to the phone lines. We'll welcome in Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. Get his thoughts on what happened out in Waco, Texas. They got to see it firsthand as Auburn starts the season 1-0 and prepares for Ball State on Saturday. And while they do prepare for Ball State on Saturday, they will be down their leading rusher in the running back room, as there were some news and was some news that came out today that Damari Alston and his ongoing shoulder issues, he will not be playing in the game against Ball State. He is going to be sat out, and we figured this might be the case for a couple of other guys. Eric Singleton was the one that came to mind to me, but Damari Alston, the latest report I saw, he is not going to play against Ball State this Saturday.
Yeah, which is definitely more precautionary than it is anything overly serious. At least that's the word and the vibes that we've been getting. It's much more just no reason to rush anything. And we were talking with Daryl Daprich yesterday about Champ Anthony's injury and how he could miss a little bit of time. We did get the update with the thumb of how it might not be as long as we thought it was, but with him being out for at least a game or two, that could really help the run that unit just because other guys are going to step up. We saw Eric Winters in the Baylor game. I thought he played relatively well.
He looked really good physically.
Did, yeah. He definitely fit the part, but seeing more of those names continue to step up and play those key roles, you could see that in the running back room as well, right? You could see, all right, Jeremiah Cobb, you're now the go-to back. Darrell Robinson, although you only got one carry against Baylor, you're now going to be the next man up. Does Omar Mabson see snaps? Do you see some of these other guys that are going to have their name called that are going to be able to get in the rotation, whether that's in the long run or whether that's something that's just for a couple of games, but it makes the unit that much stronger. Again, by no means do you want to say that you get better when your best piece goes out, but it makes it to where the rest of that unit or the rest of that room has to pick up and carry the remainder of the weight. That could be the case to where when DA comes back, whether that's next week against South Alabama, whether that's just saving him for Oklahoma, you have two or three of these other guys that have now had snaps. They've had carries and feel comfortable in the offense. It also gives you more confidence, or more, you hope it's confidence, to just air the football, right? Keep that room as healthy as possible. We've talked all about it on, man, we've now established that Auburn can run the football with all of these different schemes, with all of these different play calls, whether it's scrambling, whether it's zone reads, whether it's sweeps, whether it's just direct handoffs, or whether it's just quarterback draws, quarterback powers. We've seen all of that. Man, now it's time to get a little bit of tape on the passing game as well. So these things could work hand in hand. I know Ball State averaged about or gave up about 3.5 yards per rush against Purdue last week, but gave up over 300 yards through the air. So this could really be the perfect time to kind of key in the passing game, get some of these guys with film, with snaps, with catches, and be able to take on next week and continue to work.
And the good news is, in terms of Damari Alston, again, who is ruled out against Ball State this weekend, and Champ Anthony, who Freeze said on Monday had surgery on the thumb and might be wearing a cast and is going to be out for a couple of weeks. The good news is, to pile on to what you were talking about, this isn't a situation where it's like, Man, Damari didn't look great last week. I was really hoping he could get some more reps and get comfortable and feel good before SEC play hits in a few weeks. Or, man, Champ just didn't play great against Baylor and would like to see him get some more. Like, that's not the case at all. Damari Austin looked fantastic, and Champ Anthony played pretty darn good. Those guys are going to be fine. And the good news is that they're also two veterans, too. Not that we do want to see injuries, but to Daryl's point yesterday and your point today, this is an opportunity for some of these younger guys to get in the rotation. That way, the lights aren't too bright when you have to call on Darrell Robinson against Oklahoma, or you have to call on Eric Winters against Texas A&M, or whatever the case may be. They will have some in-game reps and have that experience and know exactly what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And selfishly, I do hope to see Omar Mapson this weekend, and I think we will. I think you'll see him this weekend, and I think you'll see him next weekend as well, because by all accounts, I feel and think that the idea is to redshirt him, but you can play in multiple games before you have to burn that.
Four of them.
Yeah, and so what a great chance for a guy who dominated camp, was all over the headlines for Omar Mapson, to get his first college action on Saturday.
And how different of a storyline would it be, like what you were saying, of, well, we know that Damari Austin was that running back room out of fall camp, but didn't really look the parts in Waco. Now he's hurt. Now there's so many question marks because you don't know what this running back room is going to look like. Now you feel like it's Jeremiah Cobb and it's Damari Austin. Those 1-2 right there, you go down a guy. Thankfully, Auburn running backs have never really been the question.
Right, and if you were going up against an SEC team this week, it would feel a little bit different, but we would still have confidence in the running back room regardless.
Yes.
So we'll talk some more about this with Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. He joins us here on ESPN coming up next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins, and we bring in our Thursday 2:30 guest. He made the trip to Waco and got to see the Tigers start the season 1-0 in person. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network is with us now. War Eagle, Brad.
War Eagle.
Happy Thursday. War Eagle, Brad.
War Eagle, guys. How we doing?
We're doing
War Eagle, doing fantastic.
is the enthusiasm? I mean, how's her adrenaline right now? About four. What are we? 4.5 hours away from kickoff.
Yeah. For myself, we are getting ready and getting the show taken care of, having a lot of fun in the studio, and then yes, as soon as I'm done, I'm heading over to Bulldog Stadium and getting set up and ready to go for Auburn Opelika.
War Eagle to that. Have a great call tonight.
Thank you very much, Brad. And we're looking forward to that game tonight. And we were looking forward to Auburn and Baylor, and it delivered in every single way. There was so much pressure, and there was so much grinding on that game between the Tigers and the Bears. And I know the fan base was satisfied to see Auburn go in and take care of business. But how did you feel getting to watch Auburn do what they did last Friday night?
Yeah, so I'm a member of the fan base that just happens to be in a professional role on game day. I was thrilled. I really liked seeing Jackson Arnold command the offense and make the right decisions and earn the belief and the respect of his teammates. And, you know, the coaches said that they kind of played coy with his ability to run with the ball. It was just something that the defense, and we may have talked about it here on the show around scrimmages and, you know, ones-on-ones in practice. When the defense has the upper hand in fall camp, it's generally because it's like playing a 3-on-2 basketball game.
Sure.
They're having to defend the passing game, and they're having to defend the non-quarterback runs. But you don't really have to defend quarterback runs in fall camp mm-hmm. because you're going to protect your quarterback. And that was an element of the offense that Baylor did have to defend. And they were so concerned with the passing game that their defensive alignment dictated that the right read most of the time was the run. And Jackson made those right calls. And as a result, he is the SEC Offensive Player of the Week. Auburn was the only team to rush for 300 yards in week one. And you get a 2-touchdown, a decisive win on the road against a Power 4 opponent.
You mentioned Jackson Arnold running the football, had 16 carries, as did your top two backs, Damari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb. And we knew this was going to be a running back by committee. You felt like those two were a step or two ahead of the rest of the room, and Hugh Freeze mentioned that time and time again, especially on game week. What were you so impressed with in that running back room, again, with those two guys going for 158 and two touchdowns?
I'll start on the offensive line and then go to the running back.
Sure.
There were a lot of times where, so in my role in the booth, I'm charting every play. And so I kind of looking down, looking up kind of quickly. And so I'm waiting, I'm listening in the headphones to Andy's call. And now kind of look up. And there were so many times that I looked up when contact was made and thought, oh, he didn't get anything. And then you look, oh no, he got 5 yards. The entire offensive line pushed forward 5 yards before the running back got touched. And that happened a dozen or so times in the game. Really impressed by the offensive line. And it's what we thought. It's why you went and got two of the top tackles in the portal, mm-hmm. in Xavier Chaplin and Mason Murphy. It's why you're so excited about having three interior guards that you're excited about. Wade and Wright plus Tutal getting some work there in fall camp. And he was terrific. And then Connor Lue played a whale of a game at center. So you're excited about the offensive line. You hope they're going to have an output like that against a highly respected defense. And that's what they did. And then I thought Damari and Jeremiah both ran downhill. You know, they didn't get stacked up and pushed back. They yeah. fell forward. They ran with some aggression. They ran with a lot of toughness. They didn't absorb contact. They delivered contact most of the time. So I was very impressed by both those guys running the ball.
You're looking at some of the stats, and there's a lot of big numbers when you're looking at the box score for the Auburn Tigers, but one of the numbers that really stands out to myself and Jacob, and we've talked a lot about this on the show, was Jackson Arnold was 4 of 7 in the second half. The last pass that he threw was that pass to Horatio Fields on third down with 10 minutes and 21 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter. How did you see Aranda's defense and how it simply felt like we're not going to allow the deep ball, we're going to play too high shell the entire game and force this Auburn team to learn and go 12 plays, 6 minutes? And how did Auburn do it?
Baylor, let me set it up this way. It's a great question. Set it up this way. Baylor struggled against the pass last year, and in Dave Aranda's media availabilities the last 2 weeks before the game, he talked about how pass coverage had been a problem. So their corners needed help. They needed those safeties to play back, or else he was concerned that Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton and Malcolm Simmons and Horatio Fields and others might really take advantage of that. He's a good coach. He's a smart defensive coach. He knows where his weaknesses are, and he knows you have to cover those up and give extra help. Just like if you're having trouble blocking at the line of scrimmage, you got to bring in a tight end or an extra running back, go max protect. Same kind of thing on the back end. You need those safeties. And so, you know, if you got fewer guys in the box, it's an advantageous box for running the ball. And so it starts with Jackson's decision-making, number one, in an RPO, a run-pass option. If run's the right call, then you hand the ball off or you keep it yourself. The second way that you could really tell those receivers impacted the game plan. So you see 11 caught passes, and you go, well, they weren't really that involved. Yeah, they were. Their reputation was one of the biggest deciding factors in Auburn's offensive success. Auburn ran jet sweep motion a bunch. Twice they gave it to Eric Singleton. He got 5 yards each time. But every single time they ran it, the defense went with Eric, which meant when Jackson kept it, he had wide open lanes up the middle, including the touchdown run that sort of salted the game away in that fourth quarter. So it was a game plan that reminded me a little bit of some of those 2013 game plans against Arkansas and Tennessee, where when you're running so effectively, why in the world would you throw it any more than you did? But it was also dictated, as you mentioned, by Baylor's, you know, too high safety alignment and their propensity to go with the receivers in motion on that jet sweep. The lateral leverage belonged to Auburn in that game because of the threat of the receivers.
We're visiting with Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network here on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn and Opelika. As we now turn the page, as much as fun as it was and as big of a win as it was for Auburn, they now come for kickoff on the Plains. The first home game of the season in Jordan-Hare with under the lights, everything, all the festivities that are going to be going on. We know of a couple of injuries, right, for this Auburn team, too, that we were talking about right before we brought you on was Champ Anthony on the defensive side of the football with a thumb injury. He's out for a couple of weeks, and we learned today that Damari Alston will not be playing in this game as well. What names are you looking for to step up in those respective roles on each side of the football due to injury for Auburn?
Yeah, I'll start with defensively. You know, Jacquez Robinson started the game and played well for Auburn in the secondary. Jalen Crawford had a pretty good game too, but Robinson played well. You may see more of him. Eric Winters got involved, had a couple of stops early. I think you'll see more snaps for him. And then new boy Fagans, I think you'll see, you know, some of his first action of the year as well for Champ Anthony. Hate it for Champ. You know, hope that he's back in a couple of weeks. He counted down the days, man, since that injury last year to be able to be back on the field. So hopefully he's back soon. And yeah, for the offense, Jeremiah Cobb gets the first carries, but you know, Darrell Robinson only got one carry against Baylor. So I think you see more of him. And I think you could see, I think this is maybe where you see Omar Mabson. Alvin Henderson can still redshirt if he gets some action in the game. You hope that Auburn takes care of business in such a way that you don't need Jeremiah Cobb to carry 10 times. You don't need Darrell Robinson to carry 10 times. You'd love for those guys to be limited and for your younger backs to get the majority of the carries in the game.
And in terms of the game itself, or maybe even outside of the game itself, with it being kickoff on the Plains and under the lights and things like that, a couple of cool things are going to be happening during this, before, after, and around. I mean, there's a lot of neat ceremonies and things for Auburn. Yeah. Basketball's Final Four celebration, a legend being there and honored as well for Auburn.
No question about it. And it's also Pat Dye reunion weekend. So players that played for Coach Dye are going to come back, and we're going to talk about that legacy on our tailgate show Saturday over on Wings 94.3 starting at 3:30. We have Joe Witt Sr., Ben Tamborello, and Quentin Riggins all joining us. Stephen Pearl is going to join us on the show as well, and we're going to acknowledge that Final Four celebration. They'll be celebrated on the field during the game, like you mentioned. So there's a lot going on, and you just add to that so much more pageantry or enthusiasm to the pageantry when you're coming off the kind of win that Auburn had week one, and when it is a night game, and when you've got new lasers and all kind of improvements to the stadium, should just be a phenomenal opener.
Auburn and Oklahoma now, Brad, are kind of that game that people are slowly beginning to turn their eyes to. Yeah. It's Jackson Arnold's return to Norman. Brent Venables knows Jackson Arnold just about better than any other coach in college football. What would you like to see, whether it be him, whether it be the offense, or whether it be the defense, that you would love to see, maybe not corrected, but continued to tweak, continued to work on over these next couple of weeks? Once you start SEC play, your confidence continues to rise.
Yeah, I would say this. Jackson also knows that Brent Venables defense pretty well too, and I love the question because players and coaches need to be taking it one game at a time. There's no reason fans can't look ahead. There's no reason. I mean, like we all see that on the schedule on September 20th, and we know what a fun time that could be. Now Oklahoma's got to get by Michigan. Oklahoma's got to get by Michigan Saturday. They're 4.5-point favorite, but I'm not all that sold that they should be. I think that's a whale of a game coming up in Norman Saturday. But, you know, if this was college football 26 and you were in your, you know, your create a player mode and you're going out and working on specific things in games, it's one thing. I do kind of want to see, like, if Ball State – I don't think it's a given that Ball State gives Auburn the passing game. They gave up 300 yards to Purdue last week and under 100 rushing. Ball State's probably been in practice all week saying, well, gosh, maybe we need to, you know, maybe we need to have these safeties back a little more so that we don't give up 300 yards in the passing game. And if they do that, then you don't try to force the pass from Auburn's perspective. You play to win the game. You call the game that gives you, you know, the best opportunity to be the most efficient you can be. They'll rep stuff for Oklahoma when it's time. But they're going to do things on the field offensively against Ball State and South Alabama that the defense says is smart to do against them. I'd love to see the receivers get involved. I'd love to see the game plan be one that, you know, it works out where you can maybe go from having questions to having answers. But I don't know that it's a given that you see that because of how Ball State kind of got abused through the air last week.
He's with the Auburn Sports Network, and he joins us every Thursday, 2:30, right here on ESPN 106.7 and ESPNAU.com. You mentioned it a little bit there, Brad, but go through it all again. Tell the people what they need to know for kickoff on the Plains this Saturday afternoon into Saturday night when you guys will be on the air over on Wings 94.3.
3:30 on Wings 94.3, and of course, there's a terrific lead-in on Wings to the Tiger Tailgate Show. We encourage folks to tune in for that and call in and participate in the program. But then we're on at 3:30, and again, it's Ben Tamborello, Quentin Riggins, Joe Witt Sr., Stephen Pearl joining our crew, Andy Burcham, Jason Campbell, Ronnie Brown, Brett Edens will be there as well. Going to be a lot of fun. We'll break down the game. We'll talk about some memories of Coach Dye. We'll celebrate the Final Four team. And we will get you ready. So you're kind of invited to the tailgate party on the radio, on the network, starting at 3:30 Saturday.
And in person, you guys still set up outside the stadium as always?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, if you got your own tailgate party at Jordan-Hare Stadium, come and be a part of the show. We're across from the Cam Newton statue right there aside, or across from the student entrance gates on the east side of the stadium. Would love to see a ton of people out there Saturday.
Awesome. Brad, we appreciate your time as always, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your week and getting prepared for Saturday, and we always look forward to talking to you, and we will again next Thursday.
Appreciate it very much. Have a great call tonight, Jacob.
Thank you very much. War Eagle, Brad.
War Eagle.
Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. We appreciate him and his time as always joining us on Thursdays at 2:30 as they get ready for their first home broadcast of the year for Auburn University against Ball State. And yeah, as he mentioned, appreciate him shouting us out for Auburn High and Opelika tonight. That game is tonight. Auburn-Opelika tonight. We'll talk more about it coming up in just a little bit. But, yeah, the 100th meeting, so looking forward to
that. He was really talking about Lee Scott and Childersburg. So I mean, you turned my mic off, so I didn't have a response. But, I mean, Brad, I felt the connection. I know you were talking about Judd Scott Field.
You play tomorrow.
I know, but he was still talking about it. The anticipation, man, it's building.
That's the Tigers everybody's talking about, Childersburg, not Auburn High. It is a region game tomorrow night.
It is.
And you guys handled that one last year, right?
We did.
That was a, what, 40, don't tell me, 42-14?
Something like that. Yeah.
You don't have it memorized?
It was either that or like 49-21. No, I don't have every one of them.
I know. Boo. I mean, joke's on you. I've memorized all 99 scores of Auburn-Opelika in its history.
Yeah, you got to tune in at 6:30. That's the pregame show. He has a full box score analysis for every single game, and he has it timed out to where last year's game ends at 6:58, and then it's just kickoff.
I mean, that's what you get on the Auburn High Sports Network. And you don't know if he's lying about it or not. Guess you'll have to tune in and find out. Wings 94.3, wingsfm.com. And yes, Lee Scott tomorrow against the Childersburg Tigers to open up region play at home at Judd Scott Field as well. More on that as we go. We need to get to our final break in hour number one. We'll take a quick look around week two because a lot of intriguing matchups in college football before we get into hour number two. That's all here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, wrap it up. Hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. We appreciate Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. He's with us every Thursday at 2:30, so we appreciate him doing that and taking some time. And as they get ready for the home opener for Auburn football over on the Auburn Sports Network, which can be heard on Wings 94.3, so make sure you do that this coming Saturday. Game day on Wings will go live at, hold on, let me do some math, I believe at 1:30. I think that's right. I think they'll go on the air at 1:30 to 3:30. Brad and Andy and the guys will take over from 3:30 to 6:30. And then, of course, the game broadcast with Andy and Jason will be at 6:30 on Wings 94.3. And we got a couple of minutes before we get into hour number two. And just doing a very quick look ahead to week two of college football, Christian. But before we do that, I want to remind folks that tomorrow we're on location. We are live on location, as On the Line and The Drive will be live at Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, brought to you by Sensi Green Heating, Cooling, and Insulation. Our shows will be on the air and live on location from 2 to 6 p.m., previewing Auburn football's home opener versus Ball State. Awesome giveaways from ourselves, ESPN 106.7, and Sensi Green. Plus, we'll be getting the weekend started right at the Midtown Block Party. That's this Friday, tomorrow, with ESPN 106.7, live on location at Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, brought to you by Sensi Green Heating, Cooling, and Insulation. For air that's cool and clean, call Sensi Green. And we'll be making picks for all of these games. We'll also be talking to Lee Sterling, who will be making picks for these games as well. But ones that stand out to you, Christian, just really fascinating games to get the day started on Saturday. This Illinois-Duke game has got a stranglehold on me because I don't know which way it's going to go. And I think Illinois is good, not great. But Duke, I don't think, is getting the love that they deserve.
Oh, I'll go ahead and give you my pick for that. I think Duke upsets at home.
Wow. You think they pull it off as 3.5-point dogs, huh?
I do. I think both of us feel very confident in Duke, and I think there's going to be a lot to play for throughout the season. There was a date that I had on Duke's football schedule. Let me pull it up right here. It is the 18th, the bye week, and then November 1st. That right there will determine a whole lot, because that is Georgia Tech going to Duke, and that is Duke going to Clemson.
Yeah.
If you get one of those two games, and I've talked about it, that October 18th date could be a team that makes the college football playoff or makes it into a legitimate ACC discussion. As of right now, I have Georgia Tech going and beating Duke at home, but that could be a really, really fun game if Duke takes care of business against the 11th-ranked Illini, which feels crazy to say.
Yeah, Duke's schedule, though, is not easy compared to, I mean, in terms of what we saw in week one. Illinois this week, at Tulane next week. We know what a disaster that can be. NC State, eh. Syracuse isn't bad. Tennessee just was so much better. California, I don't know. Brian Harsin, you mentioned it. Georgia Tech and Clemson.
Get to November.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, UConn, Virginia, North Carolina, Wake Forest. Wake Forest almost lost to Kennesaw State, bro. Imagine losing to a team named Kennesaw State. Like,
yeah,
how embarrassing would that be?
That would be crazy. Especially in like other sports.
Yeah, like baseball, bro.
That'd be crazy.
That would be embarrassing. What also would be embarrassing is if we didn't pay our bills and get to break. So we will do that, and we'll come back to start hour number two, and we sit down with Auburn High's head football coach, Keith Etheridge. He joins us next.
Extra, extra. The referral perks just doubled at Dixie. Now through November 30th, get $50 for you and $50 off for your friend when you refer them to Dixie. That's a $100 value. Current Dixie customers get 10% off any repair just for being loyal. Dixie Cares plan members get an unbeatable 20% off. Plus, you can finance anything over $250. Double the rewards, double the savings.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. We have fun doing so, and we hope you have fun being with us. And we're happy that you're here on this Thursday afternoon. If you missed any of the first hour of today's show, we started our weekly NFL segment. We're going to open every Thursday show talking about the National Football League because it gets started tonight with the Eagles and the Cowboys. So we talked a lot about that, made some predictions, some loose predictions there, if you will, about what this upcoming season could be around the National Football League. Also talked about the latest injury news for Auburn football, about Damari Alston, who will not play against Ball State this Saturday. And we talked to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network about that, about his thoughts on Auburn being 1-0, beating Baylor, and what he wants to see this weekend from the Tigers. All of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, you could check out the podcast version of the show wherever you get your podcast or on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two at 3:30, we get joined by Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, as he does every single Thursday at 3:30, talking about week one games, talking about some of the big time week two games in the SEC. Any possible upsets? Is he predicting any changes in the SEC? And I know he's happy with that LSU win over Clemson as well. We're going to dive into some more of these week two games and talk about how they could impact Auburn, the SEC, or just the college football playoff as a whole. But, Jacob, it's time. It is time. We've mentioned it. Auburn, Opelika. It's game day over on Wings 94-3, and we get to sit down with head coach of Auburn High School, Keith Etheridge.
Yes, we do. Going to play this for you in just a moment. It is Auburn Opelika, the 100th meeting tonight over at Bulldog Stadium. These two teams met for the first time back in 1917 and had a couple of breaks in there where they didn't play, but this is the 100th all-time meeting between Auburn and Opelika. Coach Etheridge undefeated in his time against the Bulldogs of Opelika.
Didn't you say it's like 45-43-2?
It is 49-47-3. Tigers lead by two with three ties in there as well. The math adds up. 49-47-3.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I feel like I was one that sat down and helped you with that.
Nope, don't remember that. 49-47-3. Auburn leads Opelika. The Dogs have not won since 2019. And Etheridge, again, Coach Etheridge, is undefeated against Opelika so far. What?
Journalism major, baby.
Yeah. That's that Auburn education we got going for us. So
45-42-3, baby. That equals 90.
Nicely done, sir. That's that mental math. That's that Kennesaw State mental math coming through, baby. Yes, we are going to talk to Coach Etheridge. Again, I was able to speak with him earlier yesterday as they were getting ready for things. And before we do, though, just want to say that we have Coach Etheridge, his entire family, and his mother in particular, in our thoughts and prayers today. Not going into detail about it, but some serious stuff going on there with them and that he's going through and that she's going through as well. And so just keep them in your thoughts and prayers as well with Coach Etheridge, Keith Etheridge, his mother, their family as well. And so here is the head football coach of the Auburn High School Tigers, Coach Keith Etheridge. Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. This is the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. And we sit down with the head coach of Auburn High School Football, as we do every Thursday at 3 o'clock, head coach Keith Etheridge. Coach, we appreciate you joining us once again here on ESPN 106.7. And look, I know last week wasn't the result you were looking for, and no. When you go down that big that early, it's hard to come back against a talented Vestavia team.
Yeah, they got a good football team. Coach Evans does a great job with those guys over there, and you know, we got down early and we couldn't claw back. You know, we made some mistakes, and you know, they capitalized on them. They got a really good football team, and maybe we'll get a chance to play them in the playoffs. You know, I'm hoping we can scratch our way in there and get an opportunity to play them again.
Well, they did some things, and we were talking about it on the broadcast over on the Auburn High Sports Network. They did some things on offense that you've never seen. I mean, yeah. Touch a bunch of trickery, a bunch of things that wasn't even on the film that we were able to see going into that game, and I'm sure it probably caught you guys off guard a little bit too.
Some, but most of the stuff we had practiced against. Okay. You know, most of the stuff we had practiced for, we just – you know, didn't tackle real well. Was, you know, we slipped around a lot the other night. You know, but, you know, and that's a testament to them. They run their stuff and they run it well.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a mix between, you know, the spread offense and the single wing stuff. They do a lot of pulling, a lot of misdirection stuff. And their quarterback does a really good job of selling stuff. And he's accurate with football, you know, runs the ball hard. So, we were on our heels all night, you know, so, can't play that way. You know, it gets really good teams. We're just looking to shake that one off and get into region play and get this Opelika game rolling and just get back on the field.
Well, that's a good thing is while it was week two of the season, it wasn't a region game. And so now you get started. And not that the non-region games in high school football don't matter. It's like playing non-conference in college. You want to win them, but at the end of the day, it doesn't negatively impact you in terms of the playoffs. But this week, it does. What's the difference for you in the mindset of your team when you go from non-region play to region play starting this week?
Well, you start off with Opelika. You know, and that's, I mean, it's a huge game, even if it's not a region game.
It used to be.
Yeah, and you throw it being a region game in there with it now, and it makes it even bigger. You know, so you know, we got to play well tonight. We got to block. We got to tackle. We got to do the little things right, and you know, and forget about last week. You know, drown the noise. There's going to be a big crowd tonight. Just make sure that we're focused on football and don't get too into the other stuff. You know, so. Just focus on playing football and you know, playing Auburn Tiger football.
It is Auburn and Opelika for the 100th time. Tigers lead by 2 games. There are also 3 ties back in there. Hopefully we don't run into anything sort of that way in a game like this tonight. But before we talk about the Bulldogs again, we're talking with head coach Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School football here on ESPN 106.7. What does Auburn Opelika mean to you, coach? You've been here for several years now, and you've had your fair share of these types of games. Opelika hasn't won since 2019, so it's been a nice run for the Tigers. What does this game mean for you and the people of this town, in your opinion?
Well, it's big. You know, it's a rivalry game. It's one of the biggest rivalry games I've ever been a part of. Of course, I was coached at T.R. Miller. They had, you know, Battle of Murder Creek with them and W.S. Neal. You know, I was at Oxford. You know, Oxford had some natural rivalries there. And, you know, and then, of course, being at Leeds, you know, you got Moody right down the road. That's a kind of natural rivalry. And, you know, I think that being those places sort of sets up for this type of rivalry. But I really do think this is the biggest one, you know, because it's two big schools, you know. The Battle of Murder Creek is a smaller school type rivalry. But this is 100 games. Man, they played 100 games against each other.
Yeah.
It's a lot of games. And to be that close in the number of wins and losses and stuff, I remember 2 or 3 years ago when I got here, you know, we're going into the game, you know, the year after I got here. We won the first one, and then that next one, it was evened up. I mean, it was like 48-48 or something like that, 49-49. Yeah. So same number of wins, same number of losses, and 3 ties. That's amazing that it could be that close in that number of games. But that just tells you what kind of rivalry it is.
Yeah, and it's special with the towns running into each other now, and everybody knows everybody, and the kids on your team are friends with the kids on their team and vice versa. So all of that gets built into a game like this for the 100th meeting and the Auburn-Opelika rivalry. But it is game one of region play, and that's a really hard start to this region. And last year you were able to take them down at Duck Sanford Stadium in a really tight game that you had to come back and win against a really, really good Opelika team.
And get a stop.
Stop
at the end to actually seal it. So they were driving down to try to tie it or you know, try to give them a chance to go ahead. But, you know, we got a big interception right there by Gampson, Alex Gampson. So, you know, just looking to get out there and get the sour taste out of our mouth from last week and do it in a big atmosphere like this.
What does Opelika do well, Coach? What have you guys focused on this week for Opelika on both sides of the football? What do they do well?
Well, offensively, they run the ball really well. They got 3 good running backs. They've done a really good job up front. They do a lot. They do some play action stuff that can give you problems because they run the ball real well. They can play action. And, you know, they got receivers that'll go get it. You know, 2, 18, you know, those guys are really good receivers. They got 30. They love to throw it at 2 out of the backfield. Big, huge fullback type kid. I think he's 240, 250. you know, big old kid. And both their running backs run really hard. I think one of them's 200, the other's 210,
yep.
You know, so 24 and 3. So, you know, they've got a really good football team. And Kobe does a really good job out of play action and stuff like that. But they'll get in the gun and they'll throw the screens, they'll throw the deep ball. You're going to get tested in the secondary too.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say defensively they fly to the football too.
Yeah, you know, so super talented.
Yeah, really talented on defense.
What's something from last week that you want to see differently from your team just as a whole, whether it's execution or attitude or whatever the case may be?
Definitely execution. You know, I think that we left some points out on the field last week. And I think that had to do with us getting behind early, mm-hmm. you know. But, you know, we had a third and four, ball was snapped. We got receivers open for the first down, and we snapped the ball over the quarterback's head. You know, just stuff like that really hurt us last week that we need to clean up. Got a third down play. We're about to get a stop, maybe get the ball back. We get a personal foul. But, you know, that's stuff that's not common for us. You know, we usually don't do that type of thing. We've got to eliminate those things if we want to win big football games.
Tigers and Bulldogs. It's at Bulldog Stadium on a Thursday night, second one in a row.
Yeah.
I know that kind of makes the week short. It puts a heck of a lot more stress on it just having to prepare a day early.
Yeah, it does. I don't like playing on Thursday. I'll be honest with you. Thursday nights, you know, it jams everything together.
Well, you know the state championship's on a Wednesday night now.
Yeah, I know. I understand. That's a different type of ballgame. You actually have that whole week.
That's right.
Another half a week, so I just hate jamming it all in. The good thing is we played last Thursday,
sure.
So we ain't got to cut out a day, you know. So we were able to come in and watch film stuff on Friday. So it's Alabama High School Game of the Week, so it's going to be on TV, it's going to be on radio, it's a big game, you know, and our kids get to showcase themselves, and hopefully they go out there and do it in a positive way. I know they're going to play hard. You know, we're going to play with class. We're going to play hard. We're going to, you know, it's going to be a dogfight because it's Opelika Auburn game.
Auburn, Opelika for the 100th time. We'll have the radio broadcast for you over on Wings 94.3, wingsfm.com, and the Radio Alabama app. That'll be pregame at 6:30 and kickoff at 7. We'll dive into this rivalry, what this game could be, and how each team can try and start 1-0 in region play. Head coach Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School Football. He joins us every Thursday here on ESPN 106.7 at 3 o'clock on Thursday afternoons. And, Coach, we are looking forward to watching you guys go play. We got you and your family in our thoughts and prayers as well. I know it's been a big week. And a lot going on. And so get out there, go get them tonight, and we appreciate your time. Go Tigers.
Thank you, Jay. Go Tigers. God bless.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Keith Etheridge, the head coach of Auburn High School Football, for joining us on the show as he does every single week. And got that knocked out yesterday since, of course, Auburn and Opelika do play today. I almost muted my mic in time, but yours wasn't on. But
my bad. Sorry. I sneezed. Nice job, Ron.
Way to go, Paul.
Is that what it is? Yeah. You just sneezed.
Yeah. Oh, never mind. I'm thinking of a different one. I'm thinking of a different vine. I'm thinking of the one of the hockey game where the dad's down there beating on the glass and it shatters everywhere.
Oh, no. There's one of Ron and her wife is recording all the deer eating the food in the backyard. And he sneezes and all the deer run away. I just sneezed. What?
Yeah, I have seen that one. There's also the Frisbee golf one that I can't say on the radio because that one's really funny. It has to do with a guy named Richard. So if you've seen that
one. Throws it over the road.
Yes, he does. Not anywhere close to straight, that's for sure. So, yes, again, we appreciate head coach Keith Etheridge for joining us. He'll be back with us live next week on Thursdays at 3 o'clock, but with Auburn and Opelika playing tonight, that is the 100th meeting of the Tigers and the Dogs tonight over at Bulldog Stadium. If you want to go to the game, too bad.
Sorry.
Tickets are sold out. They sold out at the very beginning of the week. I heard that Opelika released a few extra tickets a couple of days ago, and those sold out immediately. So it's going to be
a wild scene at Bulldog Stadium. We had a ton of fun last year at the Duck. Auburn with a comeback victory last year against Opelika. And so game three of the season, game one of region play. So it's all that more important between Auburn and Opelika tonight. And if you don't have tickets, the best way to take in all the action is Wings94.3, WingsFM.com, and that Radio Alabama app. We're on the air on the Auburn High Sports Network. Pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7. Myself, Rob Pate, Jack Hutton, we're going to be on the air and going to have a lot of fun. Really, really looking forward to my second rendition of Auburn Opelika on the football field. So looking forward to that coming up in – we're on the air in 3 hours and 9 minutes.
Man.
I'm not stressed at all.
No.
No. No, I'm really excited. I just need Auburn to play better than they did last week.
Well, that's the good thing about, I mean, everybody talks about it, and you talked about it with Coach Etheridge, of just it simply being, yes, the way that last Thursday night didn't go as planned, but how quickly you can throw that game in the dumpster, you get right back onto the football field, you can correct a lot of things, and with that being a non-region game, it was essentially the preseason, and now mm-hmm. this is when things really amp up. It's the same for Lee Scott Academy as well. We don't play tonight, play tomorrow night. First region game against the Tigers of Childersburg. Lee Scott Academy 2-0, looking to move to 3-0 after a really, really good win against Lochipoca last week, 31-21. The Warriors continue to build in the right direction and hoping they can do so to kick off region play tomorrow night. That pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7 over on AU 100.3 FM with myself and my color commentator, my good buddy Rhett Crome.
Yep, so we got a lot of stuff going on for you over the next several days. Again, tomorrow we're also live on location is ESPN 106.7. We're going to be at Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge. That's brought to you by Sensegreen Heating, Cooling, and Insulation. We're out there for their block party, the Midtown Block Party. It's Midtown, the white buildings across from Niffer's off of Opelika Road. So come check us out. We're there from 2 to 6 p.m. tomorrow.
I think it's just road, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Off of, road. Sorry. Good call. If I didn't have to say their name, I wouldn't. But I have to, unfortunately. So
it's just those houses across from Niffer's.
Say it with me, folks. We know Leica. Fill in the blank. Yes, we're at Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge tomorrow, 2 to 6 on the line and the drive. We're on location. Come hang out. Come let Uncle T-Bone buy you a cold snack. We'll have some giveaways and things. We're talking week 2 of college football tomorrow, so really looking forward to being back there. They always take good care of us, our buddy Josh Nagel and the gang at Auburn Plaza Bar, so looking forward to being out there this time tomorrow.
Yeah, should be a whole lot of fun. You mentioned diving into some of the week 2 games. We do have a couple more that we want to get to before our break, but some news in just the generic college football world seemed to have been really taken off. It got voted on, what was it? I mean, it was right around when the show started, mm-hmm. And it's really taken off a lot of steam. But the idea that rather than having 1,900 transfer portal windows, possibly going down to one.
Yeah, it was reported that the NCAA Oversight Committee voted to move towards a one transfer portal cycle for college football. Here's what it says. The NCAA Football Oversight Committee voted to support a single transfer portal window in January, Ross Dellinger reported for On3 earlier today. This transfer portal window would be in early January. It would be a one-time portal window, one cycle. You get one shot. If you're trying to get in, if you want to go somewhere, you got one chance to do it. Now, this does not mean it is being implemented. This is not confirmed. This is not 100% happening yet. This is just the NCAA saying, hey, we support this idea. We need this to, we want this to move forward for there to be one transfer portal window in the beginning of January.
Yeah, they're trying to make it M&M. You only get one shot.
You only get one shot. And look, this is what a ton of people have been talking about, right?
They say it's early January, though.
Mm-hmm.
So what, the third round and the national championship won't even be played yet? I know that those are always the exceptions of you get that extra week or whatever, but
yeah,
I know they when they were initially talking about it, it's, okay, well, make it the night of or make it the following day. That's when everything starts so that way every team is still on that level playing field.
Ross Dellinger says the administrative committee still needs to formally adopt the change later. The 10-day window is expected to open on January 2nd.
10 days, too.
Yes, 10
so
days.
Not the yep. month-long portal. It's 10 days.
Yep.
So basically, they're moving the spring portal to the winter portal, and that's the only one.
They're combining them.
Would be the mm-hmm. only one.
Yep, says Pete Nako says this would be 10 days starting on January 2nd. No spring portal, no 30 days. This would be a one-time 10-day portal window that opens on January 2nd.
Again, that just makes it confusing for the teams that are in the college football playoff.
But to be fair, do those teams necessarily need the help in the transfer portal? I think they still deserve a shot to get kids out of the portal and still be involved in that. But yes, I get what you're saying. But for the other 99% of college football, you
right.
get one portal window. It opens on January 2nd. You've got 10 days to get in. Then I'm sure the rules will still apply. Once you're in the portal, then you can stay in until you're obviously committed somewhere. You don't have to commit within 10 days. But none of this jumping in later and going through spring ball and then leaving somewhere and getting some money and doing all that mess. They're trying to get rid of that. Again, this does not mean that it is fully guaranteed yet. It still needs to be approval, or it still needs to get approved, but the NCAA has given their vote of approval for it. I can't believe they did it.
While you're there, go ahead and throw in a comma, and if you need to do it like all of the medical commercials do, where it's at the very bottom, or you say it in really fine print, and it's said really, really fast, just add in there, you get one free one, and then after that, you gotta sort of some sort of sit-out year, or
bring it back.
Some add something. You get that one free transfer. If that first school you committed to, you realize that it just doesn't work out, we completely understand. You get that freebie. But when you're seeing these kids play 6 years of college football at five different schools or six different schools, that's when you and the entire world of college football knows that there's a problem. It just feels like it went on too long, that nobody wants to be the one to put their foot down and sort of find a way to stop it.
Yeah.
Or try to stop it.
And I understand the argument of, okay, I went through spring practice, I realized that I'm going to be the fourth string running back, and I'd like to go try my chances somewhere else and see if I can move up the depth chart and get a better opportunity. I understand that. But the problem is the people that are abusing that system. It just like everything in life, it's the ones that take advantage of it that ruin it for everybody else. And that's exactly what has happened with the transfer portal here. Is, yeah, you're a third, fourth string running back at a P4 school, and you know that your time's just not going to happen, so you're going to try and go somewhere else to maybe a G5 school and try to move up in the chain, right? That's okay. I understand that. But it's the TJ Finley's of the world. It's the Caden Proctor's of the world who transferred from Alabama, went to Iowa, went through spring practice, got NIL money, and then went back to Alabama. That's the guy that ruined it for everybody. He is the reason they're trying to do this. And while it may not be fair to eventually you've got to put your foot down, and this is the NCAA finally trying to walk back what they screwed up the first time and saying, hey, this is what we want to do. Somebody sent us a text really quick in the text box. They said, what if they did May instead? After spring isn't ideal, but it's when guys legitimately want to jump in because they lost a job, which is what I was alluding to just then.
It makes sense from the player standpoint, but it hurts the coaches even more because you feel like at that point you're trying to figure out a depth chart. You're trying to figure out who's going to be who. And all of a sudden, you're now having to fight your roster even more.
And to what you said, they may have a second window after spring, but you got to sit out if you're going to leave. You don't want to stick it out? Cool. Go find a new opportunity, but you're going to be punished for doing so. I bet Chris Gordy has thoughts on this. What do you think? We'll get his thoughts and whatever that is. And he has no choice but to talk good about Auburn this week. The Tigers are 1-0. We talk to Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC after this.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And we bring in our man Chris Gordy, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, our longtime Thursday guest with us on the show. And we're into another football season, Mr. Gordy. And you got to have something good to say about Auburn with what they did against Baylor last Friday night, right? Come on now.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought they were great. I've actually been asking a lot of the – or answering a lot of the naysayers who were going, yeah, but they still can't throw it. You know, it's been the argument all week about you take what the defense gives you. We just taped the segment with our guy Sean Salisbury, former college NFL quarterback, worked with ESPN for years, analyzes quarterback play, and he said he loved what he saw at Jackson Arnold. He said, yeah, there are going to be some weeks where you play a team that – the matchup is, you know, they're playing the pass, so go run it at them. And Auburn was able to run it at will on them. And what I loved about it was, look, it was a tough, hostile road environment. Hostile, I'll use lightly. It's Baylor. It wasn't exactly like it was playing in the swamp. But still, I mean, that crowd was bringing it. They wanted it. It was a season opener. And every time Baylor cut the game to a one-score game, Auburn would answer. And that's what I like. That's the hallmark of a good team. And that's almost something that felt like the Auburn teams of the past 2 years weren't able to do. That, you know, as soon as an opposing team cut it to a one-score game in the second half, all hell will break loose. Here comes a debacle, a fumble, a turnover. They protected the football, and I liked what we saw from Auburn in week one.
Well, I assume that would be looped into the answer of the question I'm about to ask you. It's just biggest takeaways from week one around the Southeastern Conference. Auburn beating Baylor. You had South Carolina handling Virginia Tech. Tennessee looked good against Syracuse. Of course, Alabama falling. Your LSU Tigers got it done. Texas looked abysmal against Ohio State. Just biggest takeaways from you, Chris, from around the SEC in week one.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway was we'll start with the Alabama debacle. I mean, that was atrocious for a team that, you know, we talked about as, you know, oh, this is going to be much better with Ryan Grubb as the OC, and they're going to unleash Ty Simpson. And, oh, yeah, Jalen Milroe was the problem last year. You know, our buddy Chris Marler came on the show earlier this week and said, you know, Alabama fans owe Jalen Milroe an apology because, you know, this was clearly – you know, part of something bigger. And I honestly thought it too. I mean, you know, everybody just thinking that Ryan Grubb was going to come in and solve all the problems and, oh, he's worked with Kalen DeBoer before. I've said this before. I don't think Kalen DeBoer is cut out to be an SEC coach. I just don't. I think he's a good coach. He's not a great coach. And, you know, I've used the comparison before. Brett Bielema was a really good coach at Wisconsin before, won a ton of games there. But when he got hired by Arkansas, he realized it was a different league, and he couldn't cut it here. Now look at him with Illinois. He's got Illinois as a top 15 team, and they look pretty good. So it's just some guys just aren't cut out for this league, and I think, you know, I stand by. That's what I think Kalen DeBoer is. He's just, you know, he's not cut out for the SEC, and particularly not cut out for Bama. I mean, maybe if he was at Vanderbilt or Missouri or something, I'm sure they'd be fine with him doing what he does there. But I just think this thing is a whole debacle. That's not to say Alabama can't turn it around and get better. I think they will. I think Ty Simpson will play much better here at home against Louisiana Monroe this weekend. But, gosh, if they look as putrid on offense as they did last week and the defense looks like they don't give a damn and would rather be anywhere else, that's going to be a problem. But, you know, that was the big takeaway. I thought Arch overwhelmed at Ohio State was as expected. I didn't come away from that going, oh, my God, Arch is a bust. I think they're going to be fine. Texas plays their next three games all at home against San Jose State, UTEP, and Sam Houston State. Newsflash, Arch is going to throw for like 300 yards in those games. He's going to throw for like 10 touchdowns over those 3 weeks. Look pretty good, and we're all going to be buying back into Arch Manning. So I think he'll be fine. But the team that wowed me the most was LSU. I mean, for what they were able to do, go on the road in that hostile environment of Clemson and play how they did, I thought the offense played better than the box score showed because, you know, a touchdown was taken off the board for them. They left points on the board before halftime. So, to me, the LSU defense, I mean, that's the best LSU defense I've seen in the last decade. If they're going to play like that all year, just swarming to the football, cover corners that can cover, blitzing like crazy, I thought all that was really, really good. So, to me, yeah, the most impressed out of week one was LSU, most depressed. I'm putting Alabama up there.
Well, Chris, I want to be able to ask you a question about Hugh Freeze. And I know you've been somebody very vocal about the offensive success or lack thereof. What did you learn most about Hugh Freeze in this offense when it simply came to swallowing your pride and doing what you need to do to win the football game, and it's running it every single down for 6 yards a pop?
Yeah, you got to adapt. You got to adapt. If a defense is giving you something, you have to take that. You can't say, well, this isn't who we are. This isn't our identity. Our identity is this. I don't give a damn what your identity is. What is it going to take to win? That's what Hugh Freeze's mindset has to be, and that's what it looked like last Friday night was, you know, he could have forced it to, no, we are a passing team. We got to get Cam Coleman involved. We got to get Eric Singleton the ball. No, if they're playing extra DBs back there and they're covering you downfield, take the run. The run is working. You're gashing them. And so, yeah, I like that. Look, I think these next 2 weeks at home against Ball State and at home against South Alabama, I think these are the two games to showcase what the passing game can do. I think, you know, Jackson will throw for a ton of yards. They'll you know, get his confidence up. Because honestly, you got to with what's looming down the road, a road trip to Norman to start SEC play. So I think these next 2 weeks are almost kind of dress rehearsals for getting this passing game going, getting some confidence more for Jackson Arnold. But, man, just so impressed with that kid. I mean, I've been a Jackson Arnold fan since his time at Oklahoma. I was really excited when I heard he was going to Auburn and excited to see what he could do there. And, man, the kid just looked happy. I mean, smile on his face, celebrating the whole game, a leader. And this is what Auburn's been missing. No disrespect to Peyton Thorne, but a little disrespect to Peyton Thorne. This is what they were missing the last two seasons. And Auburn's got a guy who can run this offense now.
We're talking with Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, which you can find wherever you get your podcast or on YouTube as well. Before we talk about week two games, because some fascinating matchups around the Southeastern Conference, we saw some news a couple of hours ago from the NCAA's Oversight Committee that they voted on a new transfer portal rule where there would be one window starting January 2nd for 10 days. They're trying to eliminate the spring portal that all of these coaches have complained about so much. This is not official yet, Chris. It's just the NCAA saying, hey, we support the idea of a one-time portal window on January 2nd for 10 days. Your thoughts on that news from earlier this afternoon?
Yeah, not a surprise. I mean, college football is ever-changing. It feels like with all these new changes, expanded playoff, NIL, transfer portal, every offseason there's going to be some adjustments made to try to see what works, what doesn't work, what do we need to change. And so, not a huge surprise there. I do think that we are going to see this approved because a lot of these coaches were pushing for this. And, man, it is just going to make for a wild couple of weeks from when your regular season ends, you know, first week of December, if you're not playing in a conference championship game, into the, you know, January 2nd, I believe is what Ross Dellinger said, hypothetically this would open for 10 days. You know, we're going to see names being thrown around like crazy, and coaches are going to have to do a lot more work. And think of the timeline, guys. You are working on first week of December, your regular season wrapping up, your recruiting class, you know, the 80 to 90% of your recruiting class that you're signing, getting that on paper first week of December, and then immediately going into the transfer portal and going, okay, who do we need? What money is left over? What revenue share do we have left? Can we get them an NIL deal? Will the collective get them a deal? I mean, you got to do all that very quickly here.
Right.
Which is where the bulk of the transfer happened last year. I mean, there wasn't a ton of dudes that moved in the spring portal, but the spring portal will now be a thing of the past. It won't even be an option. So it's just going to be hot and heavy. A lot of names moving around very quickly in that first week and a half of January.
We're talking with Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, as we do every single Thursday at 3:30. And Chris, now that you've seen all of these teams take place in week one, whether that's transfer quarterbacks, whether that's new quarterbacks, a lot of these games in week two are surprisingly really, really good games. You feel like usually week two and then week 12 or week 13 are kind of those underwhelming slates, but a really good SEC slate here this weekend. You have Kansas, Missouri, you have Arizona State going to Mississippi State, you have Vanderbilt, Virginia Tech, and then you have Michigan going to Norman, Oklahoma. Any of these games really, really standing out and maybe a bold prediction somewhere in there?
Yeah, I mean, the Oklahoma-Michigan one stands out because, look, this is a good Michigan team. I know a lot of people are going to make of it of, oh, well, it's you know, it's Bryce Underwood, and he's a true freshman. Yeah, he's a stud true freshman, by the way, too. I mean, he's a freak. He's got the wheels and the arm that can do some damage. But, you know, it's Oklahoma at home. And John Mateer, I get it, was Illinois State in week one, but they are going to be expected to go take care of business and win a game at home. You know, and look, that would be very disappointing for them to lose a game like this early in the season, knowing all the SEC slate you got coming up in the coming weeks. So Oklahoma needs to find a way to win this one. You know, somebody said to me earlier today, it's Brent Venables versus a freshman starting quarterback. Yeah, I would take Brent Venables, and he's going to find some ways to disguise some coverages and really confuse him and come out on top. To me, a game that really intrigues me is South Florida at Florida. South Florida looked really good last week in upsetting Boise State. Byron Brown is a quarterback that's been there forever. They're a 17.5-point underdog in the Swamp. I just keep looking at that line saying that is a ton of points. Like, wouldn't shock me at all if USF could hang around with Florida for a while on that one. I think Florida will win, but I think USF can hang.
And Florida afford to lose that game, Chris, with the schedule they have coming up.
No, I mean, they're going to Baton Rouge next week, and that's a massive game for them against LSU. So, yeah, Billy Napier almost has to, you know, you have to win this one. Kansas at Mizzou is a fun one, renewed rivalry of a lot of hatred, and talked with our guy John Miller on Locked On SEC today. He gave us the background. I mean, they absolutely cannot stand each other. So, big game for Eli Drinkwitz and Mizzou. By the way, Mizzou plays their first six games at home. They don't leave Como until late October. That is crazy. You talk about the schedulers doing you some favors. I think Drink, they got to take advantage, win it. I think Jeff Lebby has a chance to pull off a massive win in year two in Starkville with number 12 Arizona State coming to town. They are 6.5-point home underdogs. I'm just telling you, I saw them practicing the cowbells, and it looked like dinner bells that your mom would ring. That's what they were practicing with. I'm like, that is not the sound that is going to be coming from the stands in Starkville on Saturday with the real-life cowbells. So I think – and look, their rush attack looked good in week one. Fluff Bothwell and Devon Booth, I get it was Southern Miss. Blake Chapin looked pretty good throwing the football. I think Mississippi State's got a chance there.
Okay, and then the game that everybody is jumping on because the line just seems way too good to be true, Ole Miss and Kentucky. 9.5 for Lane Kiffin and the Rebels taking on a Kentucky team that many people picked not to win an SEC game. I mean, is that line too good? Is there something we're not seeing here in this game between Ole Miss and Kentucky, Chris?
Well, what you're not seeing is the last four games have all been decided by 3 points or less. For some reason, Lane Kiffin is just, you know, Mark Stoops is Lane Kiffin's kryptonite. Whatever it is, Mark Stoops, his defensive mind, they're able to scheme for the offensive system that Lane Kiffin runs. And for some reason, these games have all been very, very close, including a Kentucky win last year that ousted Ole Miss basically from the playoff. Yeah, I've had several people tell me all week they think, oh, Ole Miss, they vow revenge. They want to get revenge. They want to get revenge all they want. They still got to go play, you know, good football in Lexington on the road against, you know, what appears to be a pretty decent Kentucky defense. Now, the big question is Kentucky's offense. Zach Calzada looked terrible last week. He just did. The ground game looked good in their win over Toledo, which, by the way, people were picking Toledo in that upset. Give Kentucky credit. They were able to find a way to win, albeit an ugly win. But if they can run the football at Ole Miss, I think they'll have a chance to maybe hang around in this one. But Austin Simmons, he threw two early picks last week against Georgia State. You know, if he makes those mistakes this week against Kentucky, it could cost them. So, yeah, it's around 9.5. If you could get it to 10.5, I might take Kentucky plus the points. But I don't know. My ultimate vibe, it's Zach Calzada. He looked poo-poo in week one. I'm going to stick with Ole Miss.
There you go. That is the professional analysis that we bring Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC on this program for. And to nobody's surprise, that's how Zach Calzada looked when he put on a Kentucky uniform. So, Chris, we appreciate you, my friend, as always. It's so much fun talking to you, and especially now in football season where we get to review the previous week and preview the week coming up. Tell people where they can find your podcast where you're doing the exact same thing over the next several days.
Yeah, Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcasts. We've had some great conversations kind of previewing all the matchups this week, assessing what we saw in week one. And again, it's going to be posted tomorrow morning, but our sit down with Sean Salisbury, longtime college quarterback and analyst, and Of course, he broke down Jackson Arnold and what he saw from him in that Baylor game. So check it out, Locked On SEC.
Chris, enjoy the rest of your week, my friend, and the weekend as well. We'll have you on again this time next Thursday.
All right, fellas. Thanks.
Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC. Check it out wherever you get your podcast and on YouTube as well. Did we expect anything different from Zach Calzada? Like,
no.
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 That line just seems so...
Attractive. It's got a lot of sex appeal.
That's a trap line right there, man. That it smells raunchy for some reason. And everybody I know, I heard a bunch of them on Doug's show today talking about, yeah, give me Ole Miss easily. But Chris dropped a heck of a line right there. The last four meetings between the Cats and the Rebels have all been decided by 3 points or less. And that win for Kentucky was in Oxford last year. So I don't know, man. I know we're going to make picks on the show tomorrow, but it's like, if you're Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, how do you not beat this Kentucky team by 10 points? How do you not do it? Kentucky's bad. We're celebrating Kentucky beating Toledo last week.
Barely.
And we're like, yeah, they'll hang.
Yeah.
And maybe they will.
Credit to them.
Because
a lot of people picked Toledo to win, but they didn't.
Which is true. A lot of people did pick Toledo to win.
I did. That was my P4 game of the week. If we had to pick a team that was on upset watch, so close. I barely missed it.
Yeah, you barely missed it. Well, never mind. I have nothing to say there. I was going to try and make something, but I didn't have it.
Oh, again, looking at it, it's 9.5 right now. At some places, it's 9.
What is it by kickoff? What is that spread by kickoff? You think it gets to 11?
11.
Yeah, I bet it does. You'll have big money jump in. That's the early game, right?
That might be what it'll... No, it's 2:30. That's the ABC game.
Oh.
Which helps Ole Miss a little bit because it's not the 11 a.m. game.
See, I think the 11 a.m.
sorry,
game...
which...
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I... For some reason, you feel like this is the game where Lane Kiffin would be like, all right, guys.
Enough's enough.
This is the we ain't doing it no more.
Yeah, you would think, but it's Lane Kiffin, and you can't predict him. So
you can predict Chris Gordy though. Poo poo.
Poo poo. There it is. All right, we got to get to break. We'll come back, wrap up the Thursday edition of On the Line. Tell you one more time what you need to know for Auburn Opelika tonight, and talk about our show live on location tomorrow. We have that right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Chris Gordy from Locked On SEC. Just got off the phone with him. Also, thanks to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. We talked to him in hour number one. Also, thanks to Coach Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School Football, who we talked at 3 o'clock today. So, very jam-packed show, as Thursdays typically are during the football season. And so, thanks to all of our wonderful guests, all the people who have engaged with the show as well, and also everybody who has listened throughout today's show. If you missed any of it, though, check out the podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, just search On the Line or go to ESPNAU.com.
What a nice week it's been, man. It feels like we get in here and we're not excited to do a show, but it makes things so much easier.
1-0, baby, versus 0-1. It is such a big difference with this season in particular.
Hasn't work just felt better? Hasn't the sky just looked a little bluer? It's felt a little bit nicer, which actually...
A little hotter.
has halfway been the case, but yeah. It's still a little bit warmer. But, man, everything just feels a little bit better when you pick up a big-time win. Man, there was so much on that game and so much. I've watched the highlights of that game mm-hmm. 4 or 5 times already. And I know you watch the big-time, like the full every single play.
Oh, I love it.
Updates.
Yeah.
And
it's like the 22 to 25-minute videos. I love it.
Yeah.
It's my favorite.
And it clips every single.
I don't want just the good plays. I want all the plays.
Yeah.
I want every – yeah, I don't care about the breakdown or the commercial. I just want – just give me the plays.
Man.
So.
It's been a week. And we get to get back up tomorrow.
Yep. And hey, just again, one more reminder. If you're looking for something to do tonight, turn us on over on Wings 94.3, wingsfm.com, or that Radio Alabama app. It's Auburn High and Opelika High for the 100th time on a Thursday night. It's the statewide game of the week. We've got you on the Auburn High Sports Network. Pregame 6:30 and kickoff at 7. Join us, won't you? It's 100 between Auburn and Opelika. Oh, I need to win. I need to win really bad. And we're going to have a lot of fun on the radio and online as well. So join us pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7 on Wings 94.3. We're back tomorrow live on location at Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, brought to you by Sensigreen Heating, Cooling, and Insulation. Come out and join us from 2 to 4 on ESPN 106.7 from Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.